CFO Journals, a strategic planning podcast by Prevedere, is the place for candid conversations about business planning and forecasting using AI and predictive analytics in order to provide more clarity in a time of uncertainty. Let's dive in.
Welcome to the CFO Journals, a new series of discussions produced by Prevedere, in which our CEO, Rich Wagner, interviews finance leaders at enterprise organizations. In these exclusive interviews, our guests share the keys to their success during this unprecedented time, lessons they learned during the last 2 years, and their strategies for navigating continued uncertainty in 2022. I'm Chrissy Wissinger, Director of Marketing at Prevedere. For those of you who are new to our audience, Prevedere is an intelligent forecasting solution for enterprise companies.
Thank you, Chrissy, and thank you, Jesse, for joining us today. We appreciate you taking this time. And, you know, with all the external forces currently at play, this is an extremely timely conversation, and your insights and experience here will be certainly valuable to our viewers. And to start, Jesse, could you give us an overview of your background and experience and financial planning?
Sure. Thank you, Rich, and I appreciate you and the team for having me. So my path to FP&A is a little non-traditional. After, you know, I did corporate finance, which that makes sense in banking, so professional services, helping middle market companies do debt equity raises, M&A, in a boutique firm here in Nashville, Tennessee, before going to business school. And then I got into a business analysis at Yum Brands in their Pizza Hut US business. And that was largely focused on helping the marketing team understand whether or not what they were doing was a lucrative proposition. There's always that balance there. And that team at Pizza Hut US played that role, the business analysis team. But at Yum, I got a lot of great opportunities to do a bunch of different things. This is kind of where the non-traditional path really kicked in, where I was able to do strategy, led some strategic sourcing projects, and was asked to stand up their first data science team. I think what was interesting about the pizza business is they had a lot of data. Name, phone number, email address, home address, which I'm sure is something that you would salivate over as a data scientist, and we were doing nothing with it. And so I was asked to, you know, hire on our first two data scientists and really make sense of it and see what we could find out about our customers. So that was a really good experience. But after we stood that team up and got some initial insights, I was asked to lead FP&A at Yum in their Pizza Hut US business and strategy. And did that for a bit before going to Dollar General in a more traditional FP&A role, where I was for the last, you know, 4 years, 3.5 years or so, before getting a call from SDC to come, you know, have this rare opportunity to work for a global business that is at a different phase in its growth trajectory. So here I've been since January. So I guess we're looking at nearly 9 months, and, you know, solving new problems every day.
Well, that's great. Now, let's narrow it down to maybe the last 2 years. You know, during these 19 months of pandemic, you know, how's it been different? And you're, you know, leading the forecasting and business planning teams than prior to that.
Yeah. So I think the word that comes to mind for this question is probably a bit overly used, but I can't think of a better word, which is the unprecedented nature of it. You know, in most forecasting and planning situations, you've got some analog time period that you can look back and think of as a mirror to what you're about to go through. And we just had nothing like that to really focus on. So, you know, I think early on, like everyone else, I was at DG during the initial stages of the pandemic lockdown. We were doing all the things that everyone, you know, should have been doing at that time, which was thinking about the various outcomes that could, you know, be in the near term, and the near term being at that point, the next, you know, 2 to 4 to 6 weeks. What does it mean for cash flow? What does it mean for the need to raise money? And I think you saw the markets kind of went pretty crazy with immediately accessing their lines of credit and doing what they could to shore up their balance sheets. So, you know, that was an experience I'd never, you know, been through before, and certainly one that I think DG made all the right moves. And, you know, we immediately started to think about what if we had to reduce cost or conserve cash. And I think if you read the history on this now, this relatively, it seems like forever ago, but the last couple of years, DG actually fared very well. I mean, as a required retailer that was right where the customers needed it to be at that time, whenever they were locked down. So you know, we were very fortunate on that end. I think, you know, I wasn't here, but more of a spectator for the initial stages with Smile Direct Club. And they did all the same things. And I think they were perfectly, navigated the situation very well and proved out the agility of their business model. They're very flexible, resilient, in the sense that, you know, they had a situation where they had 90% retail smile shops with 10% of their business being serviced by sending kits to customers' homes. They immediately swapped out that mix to where 80-90% of the business came from kits so that they could shore up cash, and really were thankfully in a situation where they're pioneers in telehealth for dentistry, and that proved to be a really good position to be in. So I wasn't here, but seeing what they were able to do, I thought was, you know, for me, a good data point whenever I was looking to make the decision to come to Smile Direct Club, you know, that helped me see, hey, this is a nimble business that's able to pivot if necessary, as they're really just, you know, figuring out what's next in this business and what it's going to take to be successful. So lots of pivoting, lots of, you know, quick moves. But ultimately, I think, you know, you look back at history and can see that I think business in general was able to do what it needed to do. And we're in a stronger position as a whole because of it.
It sounds like there were some immediate tactical things, you know, that you had to do to prepare for and then to adjust your operations. How about more strategically? You know, we typically see FP&A and the traditional planning cycles, planning periods, and then updating them possibly quarter and providing some strategic direction for that annual, maybe multi-year outlook. Did that change any of the strategic kind of planning within your department?
I would say yes, in the immediate term. To your point, the time horizon that we were looking on went from 3 to 5 years to very quickly, you know, 3 to 6 weeks. And that was certainly the right thing to do, because, you know, what difference is 3 to 5 years going to make if you don't make it past the next 6 weeks? And so, you know, that's one change in the near term that occurred. And then I'd say the frequency upon which we would have the discussion certainly changed. So, yeah, I think depending upon your organization and its cadence for reforecasting and having a discussion on cash flow needs and whatnot, you could be looking at a reforecast once a quarter, once a month. DG was, you know, we were very much on once a week at that time, because you just didn't know. And every little move felt like it could be significant. So I would say both narrowing our time horizon in the short term and increasing our frequency of the discussion was super critical at that time.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Well, if you could think about the top challenges that you faced in the last 2 years, whether it was, you know, staffing, you know, getting data, anything that you think kind of comes to mind that would be the top challenges that you've seen in the last couple of years for FP&A teams.
So for FP&A teams, I would say specifically, it's just really been getting the answer right. Going back to being unprecedented and not having a good analog for forecasting, it just definitely makes the job a bit more difficult. And you're kind of put in this, you're always put in this position of not wanting to be overly aggressive because you don't want to undershoot your targets, or overly conservative because then you're not making investments that you need to make. So I think just a really strong partnership has been a critical partnership with your business partners. You're obviously your leadership and being lockstep with, we're all in this together and we're going to have to figure it out, you know, one foot in front of the other as a team, has been really critical when it comes to, you know, being successful within an organization on FP&A. It's always has been the case, but certainly more so in the last 6 to 12 months. I would say more tactically, just, and this could be beyond FP&A, but one of the more challenging things is just embracing the remote work world. I don't think that that's unique to FP&A. You and I were just talking about that a bit when we joined the call. And I think what's happened here is it's opened up some opportunities for us to source talent across the world. I think one thing that Smile Direct Club has done a really good job of is embracing what the opportunities are with remote work. I've got team members in New Jersey, Virginia, Texas, Mexico, Costa Rica, and then obviously some here in Nashville. And that wouldn't have been possible previously. And I think that's been a big win. The sort of the other side of that coin, though, comes whenever, you know, they get phone calls or the ability for people to quickly just change jobs by swapping out their computer, which frankly was my transition here to Smile Direct Club. Yeah, I just turned in my computer and picked up another one and just plugged it right into the docking station. So we will probably continue to have those challenges overall. But I think as a whole, if we can kind of solve some of those retention issues, it's going to be a much better world for, you know, all of us that have embraced the remote work environment.
No, that makes a lot of sense, and experiencing similar things here. Well, do you think there's a lesson learned that surprised you during this time?
You know, I think it's one of those the adage that comes to mind for me is, you know, kind of makes sense whenever you go through it, which was, as a team, you prepare for the worst and hope for the best. And I think that is exactly what we did at Dollar General. And I think, you know, what I've seen done here at Smile Direct Club, where the scenario planning, looking at multiple states of the world, being quick to act, communicate early and often, all those, you know, flexible along the way, it's just been really cool to see how applying sort of those things that you learn in theory often in business school, you know, actually played out. And it's really great to see how businesses, no matter what, you know, challenges may be with operating a day-to-day internal, you know, lines across different departments or whatnot occur, you know, those things just fall and people just link arms and do what's necessary in order to be successful has been just really cool to see. So I've been really thankful that I've been a part of two businesses now that have weathered the storm and, you know, done, I think, emerged much stronger because of it.
For the CFO challenge with planning, due to market forces like inflation, supply chain, and labor market imbalances, Prevedere identifies and leverages external leading drivers to improve business performance, create a significant competitive advantage in a world changing faster than ever by using our intelligent forecasting solutions. Learn more at Prevedere.com.
Now let's kind of flip a little bit and talk about maybe the differences between those different organizations. You know, you were at a quick service fast food, you know, just a giant retailer that's growing like crazy, that's very physical in space and what people, you know, purchase and how they purchase, to now at Smile Direct, that it's really more of a almost a digital play and a kind of a delivery model. What do you think is the biggest difference from FP&A across those organizations? Do you operate differently?
Very much so. And I would say I've seen FP&A inside three different companies. To your point, the business models are, you know, very different between where I am today and where, you know, restaurants and discount retail was. So I would say from a business model perspective, while they're both consumer or all three consumer in some form, they're really not that comparable, as I've learned here, in the sense that, you know, DG is very much like a non-discretionary play where they've got a lot of things in there that just bring people in every single day. I mean, milk, eggs, the things that you need just to sustain. And then they sort of build the check on the discretionary items. But then you've also got Yum, which is also a discretionary product, but more than anything, it services a customer that's similar to DG in that, you know, it's a very accessible food and channel for them. But SDC is very different in the sense that it's almost like five businesses in one, in the sense that we own vertically integrated direct-to-consumer aligner experience. So we own the customer acquisition. We own the customer journey from the beginning to actually doing the scan, to manufacturing the product, to making sure that they get the results that they need, and sort of like the post-treatment care. And it's, like I said, manufacturing, contact centers, marketing. I mean, it is a very different business. So when it comes to what you have to forecast and the role that FP&A has to play, it's been really cool to see, but it's been very different. And here's kind of what I mean by that. Here's how it plays into financial planning in particular, is I would say that largely at Dollar General, the FP&A role had been working on like the long-term financial plan and certainly keeping the forecast and budgeting cycles running and making sure that we understood more of like the near-term implications of various investment decisions. Here, we've got five different effective businesses within one umbrella. you'll see FP&A playing a role that's almost, that's, I would say, much more tightly partnered with these various business units as they are looking for the financial perspective directly from the finance team on various investment decisions. It could be an initiative in the contact center to improve handle times. It could be figuring out how do we get greater productivity on the line within the manufacturing facility. So, you know, it's kind of expanded beyond just like the traditional forecasting and budgeting cycle. It's very much a team that is looped into the day-to-day business decisions. And I've honestly never seen it done to this degree, which has been really cool and one of the things that excited me about the role.
Yeah, it appears and it seems like through a lot of our organizations, you know, FP&A is becoming more of an advisor and works with the business to create the, you know, potential outcome and inform the business, which I think has been pretty neat to see. You know, not just a traditional accounting or back office and preparing spreadsheets, but really giving new insights to the business. Now, from the last couple of years, you mentioned some things have changed, the planning cycle, the timing of it, the frequency, the amount of communication has changed. Do you think any of those things are here to stay? Or do you think this is more of a transitory, you know, couple of years of disruption?
I think there's going to be elements of it that people get used to and will stay. There'll be certain elements of it that'll just be difficult to sustain unless you implement changes into technology or your team makeup or the work that the team is doing. But I think it's going to be somewhere in between where it was and what it got to. But I've already seen kind of some things kind of pull back in terms of frequency. But I do think that we will have learned a lot about pandemic type scenarios and situations that hopefully we don't have to repeat this. But at least we'll have something if it did kind of occur again here in the next 5 to 10 years that we can point back to and have at least some playbook for how it's going to shake out. I can't say that that would or should change anyone's approach to plan for the worst, but hope for the best. But it certainly could be, there's going to be a lot of learnings from this that we'll take into that, you know, future state as well as just in the near term as we continue to be more nimble and, like you said, better partners to the business overall.
Yeah. And as far as near term, thinking of 2022 and most likely, depending on your calendar, are you starting to plan for 2022? And if so, what are some of the things that you think are unique about planning for next year?
You know, so for this business in particular, I think that where we are in our growth trajectory and the, you know, going international and making sure that the model is performing the way that we, you know, fully see it working in the United States. It's, I would say planning for 2022 for me will be very different than planning 2021 was because it's a totally different business. Like I built the plan for 21 at DG. We're in the process of building the plan for 22 here. Got a lot of exciting initiatives, lots of stuff that I think, you know, any one of these things could be a major catalyst for growth in our business. And, you know, the planning for next year looks very much like where are we looking to make investments that we think are going to be, you know, not just beneficiary to next year, but really 23 and beyond. And that's just kind of the nature of where we are in our growth cycle, quite frankly. So for me, it's, you know, it's helping the business make the right investment decisions. And there's, you know, lots of different avenues you could go down here with this type of business where it is and what we're looking to do.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, as a growth company, that's top of mind for you. Do you think there's, you know, any advice that you would share, you know, as people start to plan for 2022? Are there a couple things that stand out that, hey, don't forget about this or maybe implement this sort of approach is something you think might be valuable?
Certainly. I mean, like we talked about, there's learnings that we can take away from the pandemic that we certainly need to maintain in the back or front of our minds as it relates to keeping an eye towards, you know, planning for scenarios that, you know, may seem unlikely but could have big detrimental impacts on the business. I would say that the walls falling between the teams, we call them teams at Smile Direct Club, most organizations would call them departments. So I have to like translate my language here, but the walls that have fallen between the different teams, I think, is a win that we should try to maintain. I think FP&A plays a really unique role in the business that helps be the connective tissue that, you know, sees all of the different occurrings within the organization. And it, I think it's almost a responsibility of the FP&A team to make sure that the connections are occurring between those different teams so that we can be more nimble and make better just connected decisions. You know, I think this whole idea of connected planning is one that you're starting to hear more and more about. There's different businesses that have certainly, you know, made that a big part of their shingle that they're out really pitching. And it's so true. Like the financial planning team, I think it's part of the nature of, in some cases, holding the keys to the funding. But, you know, with that, I think does come that responsibility of not just being one to just analyze and say yes or no on the investment, but to say, hey, have you thought about connecting with this team over here? Or how does that fit into the picture more broadly? And just making sure that, you know, we play that role. I wouldn't say necessarily as strongly as quarterback, but, you know, playing right there with the quarterbacks of the organization to make sure as a team we're moving collectively together in the right direction.
Now that makes sense. And in thinking about some of those, you know, kind of external forces today, which are kind of, that still continue to be unprecedented, but they're evolving. You know, are there things that are top of mind, such as inflation or supply chain disruption or the labor market imbalance that you guys are considering and maybe doing those scenarios against, or are you just kind of waiting to see?
That's a good one. I would say for our business specifically, the supply chain issues as it relates to raw materials it's played a role. The supply of the raw materials for us though is such a small cost overall that I think we can absorb those kind of things. But specifically for our business, the labor market challenges have been very real. I think the team did a really good job probably 2 or 3 years ago, having the foresight around the need to drive efficiencies in the manufacturing process. And those have really paid dividends in this tight labor market. And what I mean by that is it was a highly manual business before. I mean, I remember when I walked in to take a tour of the business, every aligner initially, before I showed up, like just looking at the old way of doing things, it's still being done for certain fringe cases for our customers, but they would literally have 30 people on a line making these things by hand. And it's just, you know, not the most efficient way of doing things. And if you could imagine, you know, servicing 400,000 or 500,000 customers a year, making 26 plus aligners per customer manually, that requires a lot of people whenever there's 30 of them that are required to do it. And if we had to have the staffing to pull that off today, it just wouldn't be possible.
Yeah.
So the team's investments in efficiency and some of those more manual task has really been a big tailwind for us. We're still having trouble kind of staffing to our current levels, but I would say that without that foresight and investment, we would be in a much different spot today.
Yeah. So it sounds like you've headed off some of these issues. And I really appreciate your time. I want to be respectful of that. And really I thank you for the insight and wish you guys, you know, continued success and growth in 2022. And, you know, once again, thanks. And let me know if there's anything we can help you with.
Absolutely. Thank you, Rich. I do appreciate it. And I'm happy to help anytime.
You've been listening to CFO Journals, a Prevedere podcast. Keep connected with us by subscribing to the show in your favorite podcast player. Please give us a rating, leave a comment, and share episodes you love. That helps us keep bringing you actionable conversations from finance industry leaders. Thank you for listening. Until next time.